Well, welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Now, it's three times that I've heard from three different CEOs the phrase, it's time to take the mask off. And that was a powerful statement that I hadn't heard before, but now I'm hearing it more and more. And I think I'm hearing it more and more because more leaders and senior leaders are talking openly about the struggle it is to actually be a senior leader and be a human being at the same time, if that makes sense. And so again, this is something that I'm really keen to explore. I have a personally vested interest in this with some of the challenges that I've shared on this podcast with my daughter. We've had people come in who have had extraordinary success, but have then talked passionately and deeply about their personal challenges. And so when I had the opportunity to get Nick Johnson, who is the author of Executive Loneliness, but also the co-founder of Executives Global Network in Southeast Asia, I jumped at it because I really wanted to talk to somebody who now had done full research and also had a passion for this subject because had a very personal story as to why this was such an important subject. So come back to me just after this break where we'll talk to the wonderful Nick Johnson and we'll delve into the subject of executive loneliness. I'll see you in a moment. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. So Nick, it's a warm welcome to the Leadership Enigma. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for inviting me, Adam.
No, it's a real pleasure. And I'm always excited at every episode. But does that sound strange, Nick? I'm excited to talk to you about executive loneliness because I'm getting the feeling that this is a massive issue. It probably always has been. But I think until only recently, we're starting to see more people courageous enough to talk about it. Would that be a fair comment? Or am I oversimplifying all of this?
No, I think you're spot on here, Adam, and I'm also very excited to talk about it because just a couple of years ago, we couldn't talk about it and it was under the carpet, basically. And perhaps the pandemic helped us here. It has sped up the conversations. We are a little bit more open, a bit more vulnerable with each other. So let's be vulnerable today.
And I appreciate that. And I say to many of my guests, I know now. I've done 160 episodes, Nick. I know now the podcast is an incredible privilege to have these types of conversations with people. And they're intimate conversations, they're personal conversations, but I also think they're inspiring conversations. Now, I didn't give much of an intro for you, Nick. So can you just help everyone understand your background and how you've come to be in now Southeast Asia doing what you do?
Absolutely, Adam. And to all the listeners, I was born in Sweden, educated in Australia, and then I lived and worked in Southeast Asia last 20 years or so. So I worked my way up the ladder, starting as an account executive in the advertising space, and then I became a general manager, then a managing director, and I worked in some of the big companies in the medical industry, specifically managing hospitals and clinics and so on. So quite challenging, quite demanding jobs. And throughout my career, and especially looking back at it, I can recall having feelings of isolation, loneliness, but also feeling stressed and pressured and not really knowing how to deal with these emotions. And these days, though, I left the corporate world and I'm running EDN, where we do confidential peer groups for senior executives and business owners, where they can discuss their work-related challenges. And what I'm hearing is similar feelings as I went through. Right. So I can share with you and the listeners today, indeed, the insights I have from these meetings.
And that's what I was excited to talk to you about, because you've done the research, you've looked at the data, and you've got personal experiences to draw upon. I'm just intrigued as to, you've obviously made your home in Southeast Asia. I'm a huge fan. I do love going east as opposed to west, I must admit. But so what was part and parcel of the decision for you to make that home?
Well, Australia was quite far away from Europe. So when I studied in Australia, I was almost settling down in Australia. The golf was great. The beer was cold. And, you know, it was quite a nice place to be. But I just felt that it was so far to travel to Europe. So then I was looking at the map, and halfway was Hong Kong, Bangkok and Singapore. And that's what I was aiming for. And I landed a job in Bangkok, was the first assignment.
Oh, it's amazing. Well, my daughter is living in Thailand at the moment. So I'm a big fan, obviously, of that region. So you started, as you say, EGN, and this is a network for executives to almost have a peer group and start to talk about some of the challenges that they have. What was the motivation behind you starting that organization?
Well, it is almost like if you imagine a mastermind group or a peer group, whatever you want to call it, which is then a safe space where you can discuss your challenges. And that was what I was lacking, because many times perhaps inside your company, you feel that you have all the pressure, especially if you are a senior executive.
Yep.
But who can you talk to? You cannot go to your boss and always and complain and talk about your feelings and stress. And what about your team you're motivating? You cannot maybe take the conversations there. So then externally, well, a coach is great because they can give you the sympathy and check in with you, but sometimes you want to talk with someone at your level. So that's what my motivation was, to create a safe space for people to have a place to really get that sympathy outside of the workplace.
And when you say this was your motivation, what was your experience of executive loneliness? Did you go through this yourself? Were you all, you know, did you find yourself going through this particular journey and thinking to yourself, there has to be a better way, there has to be a better solution or a mechanism in place?
Yeah, I didn't realize it as I was going through it. I just thought that this is part of the job. You know, I'm getting paid to feel like this.
Right.
And my way then was, you know, either going out playing golf, having a good time with my friends, or going for a workout, or going to the bar and have a couple of beers after work and forget about the pressure and the stress at work, and then have a good time. But then the issue is, when you're coming back to the office the next day, the feelings are still there. And right. In my case, until they boiled over, and in the end I couldn't cope anymore, and in two jobs I was actually terminated, one from not getting along well with my boss, the second was a merger acquisition, the third one was simply because of my own insecurities. So from there I was basically burnt out, and burnt out employee.
Can you give me a little bit more detail, Nick, in relation to what that felt like, from also a physiological perspective, from a mental health perspective? When you say you were burnt out, what were you experiencing?
Well, at that stage, not only was I burnt out, but I basically was very anxious, stressed. I'd also then at this time really formed bad habits that even turned into addiction. I was addicted to alcohol, and it was a slippery slope. In 2015 to 2018, right, I was just basically losing my health. And with that, when you lose your physical health, then your mental health is falling with it, and the emotional health as well. And the issue is also that it's easy to try to cover up, and you touched on it, taking off the mask. I call it my book, I call it the smiling depression. We are so good at putting on that facade that it's looking great on the inside, but the inside, on the outside, sorry, everything's looking great, but on the inside, it's all falling apart.
And Nick, when you, and again, I'm always grateful for such a candid conversation, which is why I say this is a pleasure and a privilege to be able to hold the space to have these kinds of conversations, which are important. When you talked about addiction, and alcohol was part and parcel of it now, you're right, that's a very difficult slope to be on. Was there an element of using addiction to try and forget? Was it about trying to cope? Was it about literally just trying to get from day to day in some way?
I think it's all of those things, Adam. And I think in life, you know, we're looking at different cope mechanisms. There's so much addictions around these days. It's social media, gambling, alcohol, drugs, sex, shopping, whatever addiction it is. And one can start as a bad habit, and then before we know it, we're caught in it. And that's exactly what happened to me. But that is also what's happening in many other executives. And the research I done for my book is that somewhere around 10% of all senior executives are alcoholics. And most of them are, you know, living as functional alcoholics. That means they handle the job and so on. But behind the scene, they drinking to cope with all the pressures and the anxiety and the feelings they have around that, all the feelings that comes with the pressure of the job.
And I'm going to ask you some questions about the research for your book, which is entitled Executive Loneliness. Let me just ask another question. Was there a point in time or a catalyst that allowed you to break the cycle of addiction? Was that down to you, or did you have loved ones around you who were helping you? What was it that broke the cycle, Nick?
And in my case, I had to hit my rock bottom in order to turn around, and that's so many times the case. You know, until the pain is so much, so great that we just cannot cope, very little change normally happens. And in my case, it was in April 2018 when I hit my rock bottom. At that time, I've written my will, my testament, and I had prepared everything because I thought that I couldn't see another day. I thought life was over, and I wanted to clean up my act, which is what many people are doing when they are suicidal. I was not suicidal as such. I just didn't know how I could break this pattern of, you know, the alcoholism, and I couldn't think of a way to come back to life. So I thought I was going to fade away. And that's when things changed for me. When I have basically taken that step, then I thought, well, I have nothing to lose now. And then I decided to take inform and tell a woman who I met, who is today my wife, how I felt internally. And she was extremely shocked, but she listened with empathy, and she immediately dragged me to a doctor. And she told the doctor my story. So suddenly, within the same day, two people knew what was going on in my life, and I was coming back to life. It was almost like my secrets had been exposed. And with that, it was a V-shaped recovery just by being caught out and not keeping silent anymore.
Wow.
And that was the start of it. It was a long journey back, but it was V-shaped.
I'm glad you married that lady, Nick. It sounds like she may have saved your life. I want to ask you another question and help me a little bit more with what it felt like to tell somebody else. And what did it feel like for you to know that other people knew? Was it a sense of, well, I'm not going to, you tell me, what did that feel like?
Well, I mean, the extreme fear of being caught out was why I did everything I could to hide it, and why most people do that naturally. We just don't want to be caught up. But the issue is here that that's what we need to be. We need to be caught out, and as soon as we share it, then the help is there. There's so many wonderful people. And in my case, the first day it was a shock and so on, but it started to feel better already. The next day after, I was surrounded by more support, because obviously the doctor gave us, you know, more guidance, more support. And the woman who became my wife, she took me to a friend of ours who had some alcohol problems before. And suddenly I received a sympathy. I understood that I wasn't alone. Here was another business person, and in this case, a very successful woman who's gone through some episodes of drinking too much a few years before.
Right.
And she showed sympathy and showed me the way to support and help. So it's a wonderful feeling after 24 hours. And I just felt so supported.
I'm interested to try and understand this. We're talking about very senior, and don't get me wrong, these incidents and these challenges can impact anybody, but we are talking about it in the context of executives trying to hold down high pressure senior jobs. So I just want everyone to understand that's the focus, but we understand that its impact is far wider in society. I'm trying to understand how someone very senior and experienced, such as yourself and others, feel so lonely when really you know that there are other people who are also suffering with this as well. What do you think creates that very insular feel that it's only happening to you until there's this realization that you're not the only one? And if you think about it, I suppose we all know that instinctively, don't we? What creates that deep feeling of loneliness and isolation initially?
It is the fact that we don't share it, and
Right.
it is just by opening up a little bit and telling a few people, we start to feel better. We are social human beings, and we all need sympathy. We need to know that we are not the only one going through this. And as we know it, that's not enough. We need to have that. And I talk a lot about the 12-step recovery programs and so on, because I was also getting support there, and I'm today giving back and being of service in that scape. And if you listen to anyone who's come into a 12-step meeting, sitting in a circle and listening, and just hearing 10, 15 other people, and in this case, senior executives who held senior jobs, being in that group with those people, listening that I went through something similar 10 years ago, this is what I did, this is where I am now. Someone else went through it 3 months ago, someone else 30 years ago. So after 1 hour sitting listening to this, you will walk out of there feeling great, knowing that, oh, poo, I'm not the only one in the world who gone through that. And as human beings, again, this sympathy is what we need.
Nick, just for the benefit of anyone not knowing what the 12-step process is, just help people understand what that is.
A 12-step program is a recovery program for addictions, and these
All
days,
kinds of
12-step
addictions,
programs
isn't it?
for any kind of addictions, yeah.
Okay, and people think, how do you know about this item? Well, there'll be an episode that will come out soon where you'll understand how and why I understand more than perhaps I'd even like to on this subject. Let's talk about what executive loneliness is then, because I think it would be helpful for people to understand what is the definition of it from the work you've done and the research and writing that you've done. Because I know you've spoken to so many people, and in your book there are so many candid stories, and actually they're heartbreaking, Nick, some of them, in how personal and how traumatic it got before things got better. And let's be honest, for some, it didn't. And they
That's
didn't
right.
recover, and they weren't able to come back. And perhaps all of us know someone in some context, maybe, that has been impacted by such a topic. What is it, Nick? What is executive loneliness?
Well, we have all heard the saying, it's lonely at the top. And executive loneliness is just that. If we keep staying isolated at the top, if we are not vulnerable as a leader, if we don't share our challenges with the people around us, and if we are not human with the team around us, then they're never going to know us. And we are constantly living behind this, what I call the smiling depression, where we're putting on this face and mask, as you referred to, Adam, and we are constantly just not communicating on a human level. And I can remember when I went through my dark times that I could be isolated in a room with family. I could feel lonely being in the office of my colleagues simply because I had lost the connections with myself, and I lost the connection with other people. And that is an awful feeling when you feel lonely in a room of people.
Wow, that's really powerful. So it's not about you just being isolated as an individual. It's actually you can be amongst a crowd of people and still feel intense loneliness. And where's this come from, Nick? Where has this pressure to keep a stiff upper lip, if I want to use a British term, to, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Where did all that come from? Was it historic? Was it just a demographic? Was it an era that, I don't know. Where did that come from of just, get on with it?
Well, I think for a start, we live in a society that, hands trophies to winners. And if I'm looking back at university, for example, I wanted to top the classes. I wanted to get, the top of the class award. There was scholarship for the best students, so I wanted to get a scholarship. And I felt great about winning, and number two is the first loser sort of thinking. And I brought that with me in the workplace. And I was only happy when I could win. I was happy when I got promotions, and it was all about me. It's being very egocentric, and I think many of the senior leaders we have are what I refer to as anxious overachievers, that we want to demonstrate that we're good, so we're working harder, putting in more hours than everyone else, getting the achievements, and then displaying that maybe on LinkedIn and in talk shows and whatever. And we are so full up ourselves that we have little time for others. I think that it's somewhere in there. That's at least where it was in my case. And I would say it's a society that glorifies winners, you know, rather than humanize conversations in the way that we do today.
There's no denying, is there, Nick, that life is competitive, whether we love our sport. And I know you are a health nut, can I say that? And that picture behind you there is you. We'll come on to that. We will do. And I know there's a huge piece for you about getting healthy. So, but if we think about the sport that we love, or we think about, you know, there is only one CEO role within a company. There is, in some ways, a pyramid in so many things. So life is naturally competitive. So what's the balance between the fact that there has to be winners and losers in life? Things are naturally competitive, but how is there a healthy competitiveness? I don't know. How does one manage the balance? Because not all of us can achieve the same thing. It's just impossible.
Well, it is about being more honest with yourself, being more honest with people around you. And I'm talking a lot about building up your support network. I'm right. talking about your personal network and your professional network. And briefly, this means that as a senior executive and a CEO
yep.
who bring the team with you rather than being the one who directs them, that means that you as a CEO need to have yourself sorted out. So if you have a personal network, then that may be that you have a coach, a mentor, a sponsor, for example. It can be both internally then in the organization and externally, so you feel fully supported. On a professional side, it means belonging to mastermind groups or peer groups where you are with like-minded. So instead of working on mental health or addiction-related matters in these safe forums,
yep.
you're addressing work-related issues, getting some support with them, and then you're constantly then supported both personally and professionally. You're bringing in this confidence and this culture in your business and in your company where you're engaging your teams and having honest conversations, and you're not scared to show them that you don't have all the answers. If that is the culture we are creating in our business, then there will be no feelings of isolation.
Now, much of my focus is on human-centered leadership, and you've mentioned the human connection piece a number of times. So thank you for that. I feel like I may be on the right track in relation to how this all hinges together. Let me ask you this question. How big is the problem? Because I know you've done some research, you've looked at some of the data. So I'm sure much of this may be hidden. So what did you use in your research, and what were your findings in relation to how big is the issue?
Well, if we look first on global numbers, about 30% of adults, according to Statista and these sites, are suffering from loneliness. And I wanted to check if these numbers were also reflected in senior executives. So in 2019, I surveyed senior executives in Southeast Asia, and it showed that 33% of the senior executives were suffering from isolation, feelings of isolation and loneliness. A third. Then I went back to the same group of people during the pandemic 2020, when the companies are in crisis mode operating virtually, then the numbers, no surprise, had doubled.
Wow. Doubled.
Yes. So 60% during the pandemic, obviously people are working remotely and isolated, and teams then working separately. So that was challenging times for leaders.
What's been the impact of the pandemic on those numbers? Yes, you say they doubled. Did they start to or did they continue to increase, or did they slowly start to come down? What was the impact, Nick?
What we are seeing now, it depends very much on the leaders and the companies' cultures, and we see that some companies are indeed fighting the battle of trying to get the employees back into the office. And if that's all you're focusing on and directing them or disciplining your team to get back, then the isolation and the feelings of that will be there. So that is on the negative side. On the positive side, we see the new generation of companies who are engaging the teams in conversations and getting their feedback, their buy-ins, and looking and working together on a win-win situation. There we see there's less isolation, because then people feel empowered and they're using the digital tools in a positive way, and then value the times when they do come together as humans. And this is the latter is how I'm now running my organization, and I feel more connected and plugged in than ever.
Nick, did you come to a conclusion with the research that you did that this has always been around, this has always been an issue, but it's now the lid has come off the can, so to speak. It's now just more spoken about, or there's more data available. I don't know. Did you make a conclusion in relation to this? This is not a new thing, but something that's been around for some time.
It has certainly been around, and especially thinking back of all these hierarchical organization. If we're looking in countries where I've been working, yep. I worked in Vietnam as well, very much a communist country. You had to be a very firm leader and directive. Otherwise, people wouldn't understand. They'd be confused. So this is a slow transformation. But I think we're just coming to the tipping point now when it's all coming together. So it's a wonderful time to be a leader. And what you're doing there with thought leadership and human leadership is wonderful, Adam.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, every episode I do, Nick, is really a bit of an inspiration to continue to the next episode. And this started as a mitigation strategy for lockdown number one in the pandemic. And here we are over 160 episodes later. So go figure. I've got another question about as I was looking through your book, I've called it the prism of success, that in some ways we have. Is it a false sense of what success would look and feel like? The influence, the power, the trappings of wealth potentially, you know, how we were perceived or the reality that we're living in. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts in relation to the perception of success versus the reality of success for so many people?
Yeah, there's always people, you know, dreaming of the success, looking at it, admiring the success. We can just look at people, perhaps we look at celebrities and rock stars and they're coming in the stretched limousines. We want that too. I think it's that human sort of jealousy. But if we're thinking of it from the side of business leaders, yep. Indeed, we see perhaps the nice hotel rooms. We think of the fat expense card, you know, with expenses with the cards and everything and the perks. But it's very difficult to imagine or see yourself with the downsides. But there are all these downsides. And if we're just looking at the leaders that I'm working with, and we have 800 of them now as members of our organization in Southeast Asia, you know, imagine if you are sitting in Singapore and you are responsible for, let's say, APAC or Asia. You have 20 countries which you are responsible for, yep. All with their own languages, all with their own legal systems, different time zones. It can be 6 hours flight up to Japan, and you have to cover all these markets. You're expected to be everywhere.
Different
cultures. And you have to fly around these countries and lead them. It's a huge amount of pressure, especially if your office then are in Europe or in US in a different time zone, and you sit in virtual meetings every day, and they think perhaps that all Asia is run like one, which is not the case. So these are the pressures that they have on their shoulders, and it's not very glorious.
Do you think we're going in the right direction now? Because if I've heard the phrase from three CEOs, it's time to take the mask off. Nick, only yesterday I had a young, highly successful CEO sit in here in the studio. We've yet to release that episode. And he was almost in tears in relation to recounting his story of the personal challenges that he had to deal with by himself in isolation and how he struggled to get through that and still was able to create a multi-million dollar business that's going to go on and do incredible things. I wouldn't be surprised if it turns into a $1 billion, you know, company. Are we going in the right direction, Nick, is my question.
Yes, we need to humanize the leadership. Already, if we look at sports stars, yep. And celebrities, for the last 10, 20 years, we have seen stories of rock stars going into rehabs when they are crashing, talking openly about this.
Yep.
We see the pop and rock stars seeking help, officially saying, I'm stopping my tour, I'm not coming because I'm going to go to rehab to deal with this issue, or I had a burnout, I need to deal with it. Leaders, though, have covered this until the bitter end, until they simply cannot drag themselves to the office anymore. And it has gone that far. And sadly, we, as you rightly mentioned earlier, Adam, we have lost many on this way. And it's time to stop this. It is time. And I feel that you're right. These conversations are finally now starting, and business leaders are finally coming forward, being more authentic, being more truthful to themselves and honest with everyone around them, and saying, I need a break here. There's too much pressure. I need help.
Right. Nick, at some point, I hope we stay connected, and I will share with you my thoughts in relation to the 8 components of human-centered leadership, because I would love your feedback. And also, I know I'm going to be coming out to the region in the not-too-distant future. It would be wonderful if we connected and I could continue to learn more. Again, that's part and parcel of this process, is I learn all the time. And I hope that people listening and watching to this are getting something from this, even if it's not for themselves, maybe someone who they know, who is close to them. I always want these episodes to be a story of hope as well. And I know you've got, there's a mechanism, isn't there, where you can come out and be healthy and be different from the loneliness that many people sit in. And I want to run through these, and then I'll ask you how people connect as well. But let me just start with this almost 5-point plan, Nick, and forgive me for being probably a little too superficial, my fault. But the first one is taking stock. Tell us, what do you mean by taking stock, for a leader to take stock?
Well, taking stock basically means that you do an inventory check. So imagine if you're a shop owner or you have a store, yep. You probably do an audit of the stock once a month or once a quarter or so on, where you check what's there. So in this case, as a leader, it means getting a spreadsheet out or a pen and paper and write down everything, or do it with a sponsor or a coach or a mentor, right. Someone who can hold you accountable. It means writing down everything. If you're struggling with sleep, overweight, or your diet, or if you have broken relationships, if you're not talking to your sister, or whatever it is, write it all down so you get this as a master list of things to look at.
And I imagine that going through that process, that might actually be quite difficult to look at when you actually see it on the paper in front of you. But I also think there's probably something quite cathartic about, in some ways, journaling. What you're talking about is journaling. So someone has to take stock. And then second one, they've got the ability, or they must ask for help. And I keep mentioning a lesson that I got where I was talking to Dr. Varun Rose in Montenegro, who helped me understand vulnerability, about a leader's ability to truly understand what his or her needs are and having the confidence to ask other people to help with those needs. And for me, that was such a challenge for senior leaders who are meant to have all the answers, or meant to be the strong one, or meant to be the captain of the ship, or all of those things. So what do you mean by asking for help, Nick?
Well, it's exactly what you mentioned there, Adam. And in this case, then, we have in step one written this list of, yep, all the things that we realize that we have gaps. And it's about taking these gaps or this list, and on the next row, write, who can I ask for help with this? Right. So obviously, in my case, I had an alcohol addiction. I had to go to a recovery program to get help with that. I was overweight. I got a fitness coach and someone who could help me with a nutrition plan. And on every list, I had to write, who can I get support with there? And that's what it's about here, indeed being vulnerable and honest and getting that help.
And you can't do this alone. And you spoke about a fitness coach there, which leads me neatly into number 3, which is getting healthy. And obviously there's a picture behind you, and that is you. So talk to me about getting healthy.
Yeah, so indeed, I had lost my complete fitness when I hit my rock bottom, yep, in 2018, and I needed to patch that back. And I say, for any leader we're here who, you know, is burnt out or fallen into some addiction, getting healthy is the first one. Before we can go externally and start sorting things out, we need to look after ourselves. And it's about getting the physical and the mental health in order. And indeed, these days, I continue to work with my coach that I started with 5 years ago, setting some plans and goals, and every year signing up for one race. And my next race is actually in August. It's a full distance Ironman race in Sweden, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Now, if people don't know what an Ironman race is, just help people understand what that is, because that's easy to say, but I know what an Ironman is made up of. So help people understand what an Ironman is.
It's a 3.8 kilometer ocean swim, followed by 180 kilometer bike ride, and then you run a 42 kilometer marathon after that, all in one go.
There we go. That's an Ironman. I have a friend who takes part in it, so I take my hat off to you. Number 4 was nurturing healthy relationships. Tell us a little bit about that, point number 4, nurturing healthy relationships.
Sure. So at this stage now, hopefully you sorted out, you're on your way to feel better about yourself, you're healthier and ready to then externally go and address some of the relationships. And on the list that you wrote earlier in the first step, there might be some people who you had conflict with, some people that you had some done some harm to. It's time at this stage to clean this, to clean up the baggage, go back and make amends, apologize, think first of your family, relatives, or your colleagues, all the people you might have said something to that you're walking around carrying that pain. Go back to them and make an apology for it, and make an amend and say that you're trying to live a more free and better life. And this should hopefully put you to better sleep at night, that you don't have any hard feelings. And it can even be institutions, you know, go back to clear up any credit card debt or whatever it is and make amends so you have a clean way forward.
And I'm assuming that this can be very difficult, because if somebody is in a spiral of executive loneliness and or addiction, there's normally a wake of consequence behind you, and you've lived through that. And a lot of people, friends and family, can actually be significantly impacted by not being able to help you when you're at your lowest point. So I'm assuming that must be difficult. There's a lot of courage involved in going back and in some ways making good. Just from your perspective, how easy or difficult was that phase for you, Nick?
It was extremely painful, and it is for anybody going through this, but it is a crucial step, and this step definitely is good if we have a coach or a mentor or someone who help us through this and prepare. And it's very important that we don't go back and make amends to someone where we cause harm to them. We don't want to go back to an ex-girlfriend who's now remarried and destroy their relationships. It's about doing the right thing. If we have terminated a staff in a way that we felt, looking back at it, was not the right way to do, it's doing the human thing and go back and apologize for that. So we cleaned our side of the street so we can walk freely moving forward. That's what it's about. And yes, extremely painful, but very necessary, and get some help through this.
I was going to say about getting help. How long did that process take you, Nick?
So I'm now 5+ years after I started my recovery, and I done this step 3 times now with my sponsor. We're now doing a 3rd time, and I believe I have cleared up everything. I even started by looking back at my photo albums from high school and so on, and seeing if there was someone I can remember that I bullied or something that I did as a child. And I have gone back, and you won't believe it, but I had actually a lunch on Friday with one of my old high school friends, and I could make an amend for something that I said as a child. And he was surprised I remembered it, and we're now going to catch up again. And so I have a positive feeling now when I'm thinking about him.
Wow, I'm surprised at how far back you've gone. And it's interesting you say that, you know, you're remembering things and having conversations where those people are surprised themselves that you're talking about something maybe decades ago, Nick.
Yeah, so here I was walking around for 30, 40 years having pain about an incident, about something that only I remember. He did not remember it, but he thought it was great that I reconnected and met up.
Wow. Well, that takes me to the 5th point, which is finding the purpose, finding that personal purpose. And that is also one of the components of human-centered leadership. And many of the things that you've spoken about are relevant to that. But tell us a little bit about finding your purpose.
Yeah, so in my case, I've been, you know, running, chasing, you know, the promotions, the paychecks, and it's been a very isolated, very egoistic, and very egocentric journey. Yeah. And now the other way I found now is giving back and helping others to go through this and learn from my experience, you know, learn from my darkest days and helping others to go through it, because life is a roller coaster and a journey. And, you know, it's being proactive and build up these support groups, these having these honest, vulnerable conversations in the good times. So when the bad times hit, we are ready for it and we are fully supported. And that's my best suggestion to any senior executive or any human being to do. If you're listening today and you're feeling good about things, well, there might not be the case tomorrow. Or think about your friends and family or colleagues around you. They might be going through these patches now, and you reaching out proactively, building some good relationships will only help them and help you. And that's what I'm talking about here for finding my purpose. I want to continue, and just like you, Adam, and humanize leadership.
And in many ways, some, you know, people might be watching or listening to this and thinking, well, it's not relevant to me. It's useful to know, but it may well be that they know somebody who is struggling, or they suspect is struggling with this, and maybe they could be the catalyst for help, just like your now wife was, where she really took you under her wing and got you the help, which then brought you to a different place. How can people get in contact with you, Nick, if they want to continue the conversation, also get hold of the book? I've got a copy of it, so thank you very much. It's full of very rich stories and heartbreaking in some way, but also it highlights to you just how much of an issue this is and the difficulties that so many have had in overcoming it. And Nick, you're one of those stories. How do people get in touch, Nick?
Yeah, so first of all, they can find the book Executive Loneliness on Amazon.
Yep.
There's a Kindle and also as an audiobook by Audible, actually available there.
Oh, great.
Otherwise, I'm on LinkedIn. They can look up Nick Johnson, and that's NickJonsson, and happy to connect with you.
That's absolutely great. Listen, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're in Singapore at the moment, so you're many hours ahead of us right now. But thanks so much for taking the time to talk about this particular subject. I know we've raced through it in a way, but I hope in some ways this episode, along with a number of other episodes, is inspiring for people to just be their best selves and live their best lives.
Thank you so much, Adam, and thanks to all the listeners for covering this story.
Take great care, Nick, and I hope that I can actually see you when I'm over in Southeast Asia, one of my favorite parts of the world. Many thanks now. Take care.
Hey.
And that's a wrap. There we go, Nick.
Thank you, Adam. Looking forward to seeing you in Southeast Asia and Singapore when you're over there. Keep me posted on your plans, yeah?
I will. I'll let you know. Yeah, I'm going to be probably coming back to Singapore. I'm going to be in China. Going to be in Hong Kong. So, and I'm a big fan of that. I always look for an excuse to go east as opposed to west. Mm. So it would be lovely if you're living and working in Singapore.
I spend more and more time these days in Phuket, where I have a triathlon training camp, which is sort of my base. I work from there, but I go to Singapore a lot and Jakarta and KL.
Fine. Well, then there we go. At some point, we'll try and find a way to connect. Listen, how was that?
I was fantastic. Thank you so much, Adam. You're very well prepared, and I love your question. You made it very easy for me. Thank you.
Well, that's great, because we just want to have a curious conversation, which, you know, inspires and educates in some way, but also gives people an opportunity to follow up and maybe connect with you and have a more full conversation with you. You're a superstar. Nick, thank you so much. Have a wonderful, wonderful rest of day for you.
Yeah, you
all
too,
right.
Mate. Take care.
Bye
Stay
now.
In touch.
Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Join us again next week for more Curiosity and Insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.